MacGyver, SG-1, Chapter 4, Personal. We are taught as children that men have dominion over all animals, that we are smarter, better equipped to look over the planet and all that it holds. Many scientists credit many factors as to why. Some say it's the fact that we have opposable thumbs. Others attribute our jump in evolution, while others credit our ability to foresee possible future outcomes and plan for them, immediate and otherwise. It is with this ability that we have deeper fears than animals. All the what-ifs that run through our head as we worry about ourselves and our loved ones. It is that fear that now grips Angus MacGyver as he clutches the phone to his ear and waits to hear on the status of his son. A son who is being held by a madman. "What do you want, Murdoch?" His teeth were clenched and his blood boiled against the terror his heart had never known. "Want? Oh, come now, MacGyver. All these years, it should be rather clear what I want." The assassin's voice was even and relaxed as ever. "I'm truly sorry I've had to resort to this, but I had to end this once and for all. You see, I've tried over and over to get past our little squabbles over the years, but I'm afraid I'm just not that strong. I am someone who has come to peace with who and what I am. And what I am is an assassin who won't give up." The words hung in the air as Mac grit his teeth, looking for the right words to say so the call wouldn't end. Jack, Carter, and Daniel stood back and listened, trying to figure out a way they could help. Jack and Carter exchanged a glance, and without words, conveyed a silent conversation on what to do next. Carter's eyes widened as she reached for her phone and dialed as she turned away from the rest of them. "Let him go, Murdoch."
"Now why would I do that? For years I've waited for you to add someone new into your life. Perhaps a wife. At least a goldfish or something. Then, out of the blue, you have a son. I admit, you've created marvelous things out of thin air, MacGyver. But a son? Well, that's a hard act to beat. So here's what will happen. You will turn yourself over in exchange for him. I kill you. He goes free. I think you know the other option."
As Jack and Daniel looked on, the troubleshooter stared out at the street, searching frantically for another option. He found none at the moment. "Okay. Where?" His voice weak with defeat.
"I'll give you a clue. It's where we've gathered with past friends."
Mac's face narrowed in disgust.
Are you playing games?"
The voice came back through the phone, cold and calculated.
"Just my way of checking if retirement has softened that brilliant mind of yours, MacGyver. Now, get going. You have an hour."
As the phone went dead, Mac turned towards his guests, but his mind was already racing. Daniel spoke before Jack could form the words. "They have him? What do they want?" "He has him." Jack and Daniel glanced at each other in confusion. "He who?" "An assassin named Murdoch. And he wants me." "Why would this guy want you, Mac?" Jack couldn't understand.
"We have a history. I accidentally involved myself in a DOA op years ago and stopped him from completing his contract. Ever since, I've been a blemish to his perfect homicidal record. For years, he would set up these elaborate death traps and try and kill me. Death traps? Daniel questioned, having flashes of an Indiana Jones movie. Mac nodded. Yeah, Murdoch has a flair for the dramatic. Jack was puzzled. How did this guy escape from jail so many times? No jail. He always seemed to die each time we fought. Jack raised his eyebrows. Seemed to die? Oh yeah. He's been blown up, drowned, fallen off a cliff. Last time I heard from him was a phone call, just to make sure I knew he was still out there. I had hoped he had just given up and went away. The more years that went by, the more I relaxed. Now he's got Sam. And I'm out of options. Daniel folded his arms for comfort. The description of Murdoch gave him chills. So, what did he say? Where does he want you to go? The troubleshooter turned the cell phone over in his hands. He's given me an hour to go where we've met before. As the two team members exchanged a confused glance, Mac thought out loud. It has to be close, so that limits my options. It can't be the Widowmaker, that spot he drove us to in the tractor trailer. Carter came back into the lower level garage as he continued. It's gotta be the theater or military base or... Does a junkyard make sense? She interrupted. Yeah, how did... I had the number tracked while you were still on the phone with him. And the closest building to a cell tower in that area was a building in a junkyard a few miles away. Jack looked over at his second in command with a proud smile on his face. Daniel's expression showed the awe of how quick she could use her military connections to get answers. All right then, Mac mumbled to himself as he brushed past the others. His mind turned towards the task at hand. As he searched the back wall of the parking garage and started grabbing various items. Mac, what are you doing? Without looking back at Daniel, he answered, Well, chances are Murdoch will have cameras set up all over the area to know when and where I'm coming from. If I'm gonna have any chance, I have to take away that advantage. This radio, battery, and a couple other things upstairs will make that happen. I hope. Confused, Jack raised an eyebrow. So what's the plan then? And let's not have an argument about going it alone. We're trained military. Actually, Jack, I'm counting on it. Mac replied to a surprised yet relieved Jack. This will interfere with the signal from his video camera, so we can sneak around and flank him from all sides. Whoever gets in there first can distract him while the rest of us get Sam out and get out of there safely. Carter, Daniel, and Jack exchanged glances and nodded in agreement. Carter stepped up and hesitantly added, You know we're going to bring our firearms, right, Mac? Mac paused for a moment and thought about how he typically would argue against the very idea. Then he thought about his boy being held hostage by a psychopath and knew it was more important to save him than any self-righteous argument he could have. Yeah, was all he could say as he bowed his head for a moment. Daniel stepped forward and put a hand on MacGyver's shoulder. I promise we'll get him back, Mac. Suddenly, a fire lit inside him. He'd had enough playing defense with this madman all these years. He needed to go on the offensive now. You're darn right we are. Load up and meet me back at the car. Across town, Sean slowly opened his groggy eyes. As the drug left his system, the room slowly came into focus. It was an old, dirty office filled with random car parts, monitors, and filing cabinets left slightly open with random sheets of paper sticking out. He assumed he was in a garage somewhere based on the film of grease that seemed to cover everything around him and take over the odor of the room. As he went to get up, he realized he'd been tied to a chair and his arms tied behind his back. As the photojournalist looked around the room, his thoughts turned to a Swiss Army knife in his right pocket. Just then, a figure walked into the room. Oh, don't get up. You seem tied up at the moment. The older, gray-haired, thin man smirked at his own remark. He was cloaked in black from his boots to his leather jacket to his t-shirt. The silver skull ring he wore sparkled in contrast. Let me introduce myself. No need. You're Murdoch. This brought a smile to his face. Ah. I see my reputation precedes me. Sean let a smirk form. Actually, based on what my dad said, those corny dad jokes are a dead giveaway. The assassin's smile dropped. Yes, well, there's no accounting for taste, is there? Sean. Or should I call you Sam? The young hostage smirked back. Ooh, wow, you knew my nickname. Impressive. Undaunted, Murdoch continued. You know, Sam, through the years I've come to admire your father's ability to create anything out of, well, anything, really. But this, creating an adult son out of thin air, well, that was too impressive to believe. Yet, here you are. Sam shifted beneath his restraints, trying to find the pocket knife his father had given him. Oh, looking for this? The assassin held the knife in his hand. Come now, Sam. I couldn't take the chance the apple wouldn't fall far from the creative tree. Sam's expression went flat. Why are you doing this? You've been gone for years. Why come back now? Murdoch strolled around the room, turning on various monitors that were set up around the room. Right you are. After our last encounter, I was content to just occasionally haunt your father's dreams. With an occasional phone call or a piece of mail. But then, well, I just got bored. Decided to leave the game and live the rest of my life in relative peace. All those years of physical abuse from playing with your dear old dad, however, took their toll. I would seem to have cancer. And the doctors say there isn't much time left. So, I figured it was time to tie up all those loose ends in my life. And that includes killing MacGyver. Once and for all. And now, thanks to you, I have the perfect way of assuring no clever tricks, no ingenious gadgets, just one dead MacGyver. Sean slowly worked the restraints with his wrists. And me? What are you planning for me? Well, if Papa MacGyver does what he's supposed to and give up, you go free. If he tries one of his clever inventions, I kill you in front of him. Any other questions? No? Good. Now, Murdoch flipped a switch behind the wall of monitors, turning them all on, showing every room in the building. Try not to get into any trouble and enjoy the show. As he watched the assassin close and lock the door behind him, Sean was left with an echo of Murdoch's laughter and the ticking of a digital clock, counting down the hour before he or his father would be dead. As Jack drove the four in a government-issued SUV toward the junkyard across town, his mind raced. This wasn't what he was expecting to deal with today. The emotional roller coaster was more than enough for one person. Daniel looked out the window, while Carter looked on as Mac worked on some last-minute adjustments to the device he had put together from a radio, cell phone, and wire. They had decided to take the government-issue vehicle over Mac's Jeep, since it was more inconspicuous. The kidnapper couldn't be worse than Apophis, can he? Mac seemed determined to make sure the rest of the group knew all that they could about the madman, explaining all the prior traps in detail, and how predictably unpredictable he could be. "Sorry we weren't able to bring any heavy ordnance with us," Jack said as he glanced to Mac and Carter in the back seat as he drove.
"It's not a problem. It's already handled,"
his brother stated without looking up from his task. This caused both Jack and Daniel to glance back in confusion. "You'd be amazed at what a little rubbing alcohol and hairspray can do," he assured them, causing Carter to try and hide her smile. As they entered the open gray metal gates of the junkyard, Mac instructed Jack to pull in between two piles of rusted crushed cars. As Jack turned the engine off, the four climbed out. Jack and Carter instinctually checked the ammunition in their automatic 32s, causing Mac to flinch. He set his knapsack on the ground and pulled out the device he had been working on the way over.
"What's it do?"
Daniel asked as he kept nervously looking around.
"Well, if Murdoch's smart, and he is, he'll have cameras set up all around the ridge so he can see us coming. This," he clicked it on, "will disrupt the signal, leaving him blind."
From the inside of his locked room, the young captive struggled with his bindings when he noticed all the monitor screens turned to static snow. A sense of calm washed over him as he smirked to himself. "Here we go." His fingers worked on the back of the chair where a screw started to give. He was working blind, but he could feel it start to give as the lock on the door clicked open. Murdoch came rushing in, looking at the snow-filled screens before smiling.
"Well, as predictable as ever.
No worries, young man.
Daddy'll be here soon.
You know, you could just let me go and live the rest of your life in relative peace."
As he glanced at the clock that continued to count down, the assassin let go a giggle.
"Now, Sean, whatever made you think I want that?"
Outside, the four peeked to the target building from behind the remains of a rusted-out Ford Bronco. Jack held his handgun low as he and MacGyver surveyed the scene.
"All right. Daniel with me. Carter, cover Mac. Eyes open. Watch for tripwires. Each team take opposite sides of the building." Carter nodded as she held up her 38 ready to go.
Jack looked skeptical.
"You sure this gizmo of yours is working?"
Gesturing at the device MacGyver had resting on the ground.
Pretty sure. Guess we'll find out soon enough." That didn't fill Jack with any more confidence in what they were about to do, and his facial expression showed it.
"Hey, remember, Murdoch is unpredictable. Assume everything is booby-trapped."
Carter and Daniel nodded nervously at Mac's advice, and the two teams split off in different directions around the various towers of rusted and crushed vehicles. As Jack led Daniel to the left side of the building, he took in any possible places a sniper could position themselves, and any places the ground may have been recently disturbed. Mac said Murdoch loved his surprises. All he wanted to do was take a trip and see if the rumors of a sibling were true. Never could he imagine that he and his team would be involved in a rescue mission to save his new nephew. "Guess you don't have to go off-world to find pure evil." On the other side of the building, MacGyver and Carter approached the open window next to a closed door that seemed as old as the building itself. As they squatted down, Carter peeked in from the bottom left of the windowsill and noticed an almost empty warehouse space. The concrete floor was dirty with oil and grease, and a few metal racks remained from when old cars were scavenged for any useful parts before being compacted. Mac unzipped his jacket a bit to help adjust the weight from the backpack he was hauling. Carter looked back at him. "Why would he leave this window open? There's nothing inside."
It's a false lead, he explained. If the door's locked and the window's open, he's hoping we'll take the easier way in. Probably has it rigged. Mac moved himself to the other side of the window and stood up close to the door to peek in one of the dirty panes of glass that made up the top half of the door. As he looked at the inside of the frame, he couldn't see anything suspicious and slipped his hand into his pocket for his knife. After tapping the knob with the blade for a current, he tried the knob, and when he verified that it was locked, he used one of the other tools attached to pick the door open. As it creaked slowly, the two paused and silently waited. After a few seconds, the Air Force captain stepped in front of the troubleshooter, gun in hand, and insisted on entering first. I've got this, Mac. MacGyver was hesitant to let her enter, but had to allow himself to let others do what they were trained for. Sam, be careful, he's got you. Just as her foot stepped inside the building, a solid stone wall came slamming down between them, cutting off Mac from the inside of the building. As he ran to the window, he could see three sections of the floor fold up to form the other walls. 20 feet tall, around Carter. Giant metal gears and steel beams pushed and held the wall in place. This engine must be in the basement, he thought to himself as he checked the window frame to verify its safety. As he climbed in, he yelled to Carter, Sam! You okay?
Yeah. I guess Murdoch knows you better than you thought, huh?
The muffled voice came over the wall. It stung to admit, but she was right. The trap was meant for him. The good news was Murdoch doesn't know he's free. Now he has time to... Just then the gears began to whirl, and the metal arms began to push two of the stones inward. On the other side, Jack and Daniel were eyeing up the old wooden door that was cracked open. Daylight shined in the wide open room from a closed window. I don't like the looks of this. It's too easy, Jack thought aloud, as he squinted trying to make out any details through the opening. Why not go through the window? Daniel suggested, as he moved his hand towards the lip. Ah! Snapped Jack as he pointed to the inside of the window frame. It's wired. The archaeologist quickly pulled his hand away. I guess the door it is, then. Jack used the butt of his gun to nudge the door open more and peered around its edges as he waited to see if it triggered anything. Nothing. He glanced back at Daniel as if to say, ready? And with an assuring nod back, the two entered the old building with Colonel O'Neill in the lead. The room smelled musty from years of neglect. Old cinderblock walls, once painted gray years ago, were scuffed and vacant of the tools and shelves that once filled the now empty room. There were doors on a couple far walls. The two instinctually moved towards them when something clicked below Daniel's foot. The sound of a chain releasing was followed by a slam of a cage around them. Before the two could respond, the floor dropped from beneath them. Jack was closest to the bars and grabbed at them. As he started to fall, Daniel didn't have the option to let go of his weapon as his hands grabbed to anything close. The only thing close was Jack as Daniel's arms wrapped around O'Neill's legs in panic. 30 feet below them were row upon row of jagged spikes. Jack tucked his automatic in his back belt and used his free hand to reach down towards his friend. He could see the instant death that awaited them if he couldn't save them from falling. As his left hand gripped the metal bar of the cage, O'Neill used his foot to brace himself along the bottom ridge and used his right hand to grab Dr. Jackson from the scruff of his jacket behind his head.
Come on.
Jack kept his hands on Daniel's back as he secured his footing on the bottom of the cell and adjusted his glasses. They wouldn't be able to hang on forever, but it would have to be enough until they were found. You good? Jack asked at a nodding Jackson as a door on the far wall sprung open. Applause preceded the grimacing Murdoch as he confidently strolled into the room. Oh, MacGyver, So predictable.
After all this time, did you really think you could sneak up on me?
Only a confused Daniel and defiant Jack stared back at him.
What? Nothing to say?
He glided closer towards them.
I see you brought a little friend along.
Closer still.
I'd ask your name, young man, but frankly, it won't matter.
Because you'll be dead. Only a few feet now.
You know, MacGyver, I must admit, I hated dragging your son into our little feud, but you see, I had to make sure...
The assassin looked down to see a red spot in the center of his chest form and grow as the blood spread across the front of his shirt. He gasped for the air that suddenly escaped him and looked up to see Jack, still holding his .38 automatic out through the bars towards his intended target. The barrel was still smoking and the smell of gunpowder filled the air. He had waited for Murdoch to get close enough to make sure the bullet went right through. As he collapsed to his knees, the confused killer used the last of his strength to utter one last word.
MacGyver.
And fell back dead. Carter struggled in vain against the walls that were coming closer and closer. MacGyver's eyes darted around the mechanical device to take in as much as he could as fast as possible. Quickly, he opened his backpack and started digging around for specific items. As he eyed the joints of the contraption, he took out as many pre-made explosives made from paint thinner, rubbing alcohol, and aerosol cans he could carry. With Murdoch, he was sure they'd be used one way or another. He caught a glimpse of some nails and screws along the wall that weren't swept up, and used his duct tape to tape them around the bombs he was building. He had one shot, and hoped the explosives would be powerful enough to stop at least one of the walls. As he lit the fuse he had made from the only dust rag in his garage, he wedged the bombs between one of the moving joints and ran for cover behind a support beam nearby. Within seconds, as he peeked from behind the pillar, Matt could see the metal joints still on fire, but still and silent.
Carter? You okay?
Yeah, so far. One of them stopped moving.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the other wall will stop when it hits the midway point.
I hope so. Getting a little tight in here.
Carter was looking for options when the wall suddenly slowed to a stop. MacGyver let a sigh of relief escape his lips when he started to look around for anything to be fashioned into a rope.
Okay. That was the first part. Now hang on until I find a rope to get you out of there.
That's okay. I got this,
responded Carter as she used the walls, only a few feet apart now, to hold her as she braced her feet and her hands and climbed steadily up to the top. As she reached the top, she threw her weight over one side and hung over by her fingertips for a moment as MacGyver ran to catch her and cushion her drop to freedom. After helping guide her to safety to the ground, he backed up to give her some space, only to see her energetically spin around. See? Basic training stuff. No problem. Mac noticed a sparkle in her blue eyes and felt a wave of admiration wash over him. Good job. The two exchanged a smile as they made their way towards the door to the rest of the building. Carter, still leading the way, led the two around each darkened corner. down each darkened hall as MacGyver kept an eye out for any signs of traps along the way. As they came to the end of one hall, they noticed a new wall of windows with static-filled monitor screens inside. Slowly, they made their way to the edge and looked in to find an empty chair with rope and a piece of something metal discarded on the floor. The two looked to each other to convey what they were both thinking. We gotta find him. Carter can hear Mac utter under his breath. The next room was dark and filled with large metal pieces of machinery and half-finished projects such as refurbished engines and dashboards. The smell of oil and grease hung heavy in the air as the two slowly made their way through the towering cold projects. All remained quiet as the two came to the end of one aisle, when a steel pipe came slamming down on the Air Force soldier's wrists, knocking her gun out of her hands. As she let out a yelp, she readied herself for a hand-to-hand battle to come. The figure jumped out, pipe in hand ready to attack, but then made eye contact. Sam! You're okay! Thank God! Mac rushed past a relieved Carter and embraced his son as tight as he could. Holding back the tears, he hugged his father with equal intensity. I knew you'd come. As the two took a moment, Carter kept her attention on the door on the far wall that was left ajar. Sam, any idea where Murdoch went? The question brought the two back to the urgency at hand as they turned their attention to her. He must have gone that way. I was on my way there when I heard you guys coming. There was a sound like a gunshot a few minutes ago. Eyes wide, MacGyver and Carter looked at each other before hurrying to the door. As they cautiously approached the doorframe, they looked in to see down the other end of the large open space two figures gripping a large cage. There was another figure lying still a few feet in front of them.
Well, it's about time!
Jack shouted over to them.
Get us out of here, will you?
The three quickly closed the distance as Carter holstered her weapon under her jacket. You two okay, sir? Better than him, Jack nodded to the figure crumpled on the ground. Mac and Sam stopped at the body, and MacGyver just stared. His mouth had gone dry from being slack-jawed. This was it. It was over. Was it finally done? Some part of him always expected Murdoch to return again and again, so he was always on edge, ready to strike. Could he finally be at ease? As Carter followed the electronic cable from the top of the cage to the control panel on the right side wall, Jack explained to his stunned brother, "Sorry, I jumped the gun on you there. I saw an opportunity," and Mac shook his head. "No, it's okay. You did what you had to." "It's a good thing you did too, sir," Carter interjected as she stared at the metal box on the wall. He had the bars wired. If he had flipped the switch, he would have electrocuted you. Daniel and Jack exchanged a look. "Any chance there's a switch to get us out?" Carter verified before reaching in. Yep. The click was followed by a whirl of gears as the chain went taut and pulled the large cage up from the floor. Sam hurried over alongside his father to help balance the two SG members as their feet connected to the solid ground beyond the abyss of certain death. While his arm was still around his supportive brother, Jack confessed, "If it helps, he thought it was you shooting him." Mac looked back at the body on the ground for a moment. "No, it doesn't." Suddenly, Sam's face went pale.
"Oh no, I forgot! The bomb!"
He started to run back the way they came. The other four started to chase after him, while both Jack and Mac shouted,
"The what?"
"The what?"
As they reached the monitor room, they could see Sam staring up at the digital clock on the wall. Its red digits were still counting down, and there were only 30 seconds left. Should we run? Sam asked, causing Daniel to nod at the possibility. Maybe MacGyver could make something to...
Hang on.
Carter interrupted her teammate and approached the wall. Her eyes followed the cord over to a flip switch near the door. Without hesitation, she reached past her teammates and flipped it. The red digits disappeared, and the countdown stopped. Carter looked back at the others with a proud gleam in her eye. Guess he didn't expect anyone to find out about this. The four men chuckled quietly to themselves as they took in the moment. Jack shook his head. Idiot. Suddenly, the room shook as the crashing sound came from another room. Sounds of twisting steel like the roof was collapsing. The group braced themselves against each other and the monitors when Carter, Jack, and Daniel noticed an all-too-familiar sound follow. After exchanging a glance with each other, the three moved in unison towards the noise. Confused, MacGyver and his son followed close behind. As they made their way through the doorway, they were met with even more confusion. As among the pieces of ceiling, two large figures stood on either side of Murdoch's body. The afternoon sun was shining down on them through the gigantic hole in the roof above. The dust was still in the air from all the debris, but despite that, MacGyver could make out the giant metal bird-shaped helmets of two of the figures. Both stoically held staff weapons of gray metal at their side that complemented their chainmail and plated armor. Before they could speak, one of the birdmen pressed something on their gauntlet, and from above, five metal rings dropped from the sky and surrounded them. With a flash of light, both men and the body of Murdoch were gone as the five rings returned to the sky above them. A moment of silence passed before Jack glanced over his shoulder to find the two civilians frozen in shock, trying to comprehend what they just saw. The colonel dropped his head.
Ah, crap.
How is he going to explain this one?
MacGyver SG-1 is written, edited, and narrated by Matt Jackson. Music by Brian Bozowski. Art by Jared Brown of Darkstream Studios. Ermel Mall and Nathan Schell of Commission Credentials. Donations can be made through PayPal at macwjackson@comcast.net. Look for more on Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher, and Twitter at macwjackson. Special thanks to Chuck Dixon, and especially Richard Dean Anderson, and everyone who is part of the Stargate and MacGyver worlds.